The Breakfast Huddle replay from Money FM 89.3.
Another day, another guest in the hot seats. As a kid, I remember there's always a case of either you are a bit of a bookworm, you're more of a numbers person, or you're more of a sports person. Well, today's guest in the hot seat can do both. We welcome into the studio Con In Tong, president of the Institute of Singapore Chartered Accountants, or ISCA. He's also chairman of Sport SG, formerly, you know, used to be called the Singapore Sports Council. I believe he took over sometime last quarter of last year. He's also a managing partner of Fu Con Tan LLP. P. In Tong, welcome to the studio. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Elliot. It's a pleasure to be here.
You are a man of many hats. I don't know how you manage your time, and I'm sure there's a lot that I'd love to learn from you. But let's put the spotlight on one of your first hats, which is accountancy. You've been in the public accounting profession for about, 25 years now? Now you're the president of ISCA. I'd like to ask, In Tong, what drew you to this industry?
Well, accountants tell the truth, and if truth be told, I didn't know what I wanted to do. Accountancy sort of gave me a way out. It was a cop-out in the sense that you could do accountancy for 3 years and decide what you wanted to do after that. So that got me in, and I've enjoyed it ever since. My wife tells me I'm one of the lucky ones who get paid for pursuing their passion. So it's been great so far. Thank you.
Pursuing a passion, I'm sure, came with a lot of challenges over the past, three decades, so to speak. There's been a lot of changes. Like, for me personally, I'm a law grad, and I have seen those changes where technology has come in and you see resistance and whatnot. As an old-timer of the game, what are some of the challenges that you've seen?
Some of the challenges haven't changed. A lot of the challenges have changed. So, for example, things that have not changed. When I started out in the late 80s as an accountant in London, I think in a spate of 1 year, 3 companies that went bust, there were issues with the accounting, there was fraud and so on. Has that changed today? Probably not. So the challenges regarding compliance with ethics, fraud preventions and so on still remain. Again, when I was a kid studying accountancy, there were only about 10 standards maybe, totaling about 250 pages. Today, we've got, I think, more than 40, probably 50 odd now. And the core standards alone are 1,500 pages. Okay. If you add up all the peripheral guidance, it's probably more than 3,000 pages of standards. So it's become a lot more compliance-focused as opposed to exercising our judgment, doing what's right. So in the past, when we made a mistake, we could laugh over it. Today, if you make a mistake, you know, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
But really, I think the challenge for the future, I know we're going to talk about the audit quality and the breakup of the Big Four and so on, but today, if you ask me, what's the biggest challenge today, and it's an insidious one, and it's attracting bright young professionals to join the accountancy profession, because we need these top guys, we need these smart guys to be accountants and to make sure that, you know, our role as one of the guardians of public trust, it's not eroded. So if these guys, the new guys, the smart guys don't come in, we've got a problem maybe 25, 30 years down the road, and it's going to be difficult to reverse that. So that's the biggest challenge I think accountancy faces today.
Okay, so talking about, you know, people joining the industry, and this one's for the parents, in terms of the starting pay of an accountant, has that changed over the years? Is it more lucrative, more attractive now? Say, if a parent's got a kid who wants to pursue a career like you, would you encourage it?
Yeah, certainly starting pays have increased over the years, but just don't look at starting pay alone. If you look at the sort of the structure in accounting firms and in the accountancy profession, you may start at, say, $3,000 a month, but the progression is pretty rapid. Yeah. So within 4 years, maybe you could be $5,000 a month. So that's not bad. So unlike maybe some of the other professions where, you know, you start at 3,000, next year you're at 3,002 and then 3,005 and so on. So it's a bit different. And the accounting firms, my firm included, put a lot of money into training. So we make sure you are future fit in that sense. And you need to look at the overall package. So in terms of parents, I think accountancy is still a trusted profession in many senses of the word. And it's a good profession to be in. I mean, I've enjoyed it for close to 30 years, so I can't go far wrong.
This morning I'm speaking with Con In Tong, president of ISCA and chairman of Sport SG. He's in the hot seat. We're talking firstly about his accounting profession. You talk about embracing the future, training to be fit to handle the future. Then there's the talk of technology. How much of an impact is technology to accountancy? I mean, are robots threatening the jobs of accountants, so to speak?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think with robotics, with AI, with computerization, there is probably a lot of skills displacement in the sense that, you know, your old skills are no longer sort of valued or valid in a sense. But there's certainly some jobs displacement, and there's a lot of jobs displacement at what I would call low-level bookkeepers level. Bookkeepers aren't really accountants, but if you look at bookkeepers as part of the ecosystem, then computerization, AI, will threaten to sort of wipe out all the jobs that have been outsourced, the bookkeeping roles that have been outsourced to India and the Philippines, for example. Mm-hmm. If you're a high-level accountant, then I think the key is probably to be resilient, to make yourself a bit more useful. And you can do that through two ways. One, you deepen your expertise, you go into niche areas and make sure you're good at it, or you have a range of skills and upskill accordingly. So those are two ways to be resilient. And I like the latter option in the sense that if you have more skills, you're more likely to be adaptable, you're more likely to be able to respond to different situations a lot better. So all is not lost for accountants and accountancy profession. In fact, it helps the profession. Let me share with you an example on productivity. You know, we always like to talk about productivity. If you have counted sheep before, I mean, I'm not talking about those you do
before
you sleep, right? So if you in the old days when we used to count sheep, what did we do? We will shepherd the sheep into the pen.
Yeah.
Right, and then we release the sheep one by one, and we count them. Literally, count them. So they have 1,500 sheep. And
school teachers can relate to you right now.
So that's what you do at least in my days, you know, when I counted sheep. But today we use drones to count sheep with imaging and so on. You know, you just take a snapshot. There you are. You know, over how many hectares? 5 hectares? 10 hectares? You get a full picture just like that. So it's so technology has, I think, improved the life of accountants in that sense. So as I said, all is not lost.
Yin Tong, you talked earlier about in terms of diversifying yourself to go into niche areas. If you don't mind me asking, what are these niche areas where accountancy is concerned? Any examples of that?
So if you look at what's happening in Singapore today and certainly around the world, we've got cybersecurity being a big issue, right? Okay. We've got financial crime, Singapore being a financial crime. We need to police that. We need to enforce that a bit more. So if you go into cybersecurity, if you go into financial forensics, and ISCA is helping our accountants upskill in those areas in terms of courses and certifications and so on. And if you go into these areas, then you're more likely to be future fit because if you use Singapore as a trend in terms of projecting what's going to happen around the region, then you know if you're the first mover in, you've got the first foot into the door, you're more likely to succeed.
Okay.
So these are just two of the other areas. Obviously, there are many other areas like data analytics and so on and so forth. You know, the future is bright, I would say.
Kan Yin Tong, President ISCA, Chairman of Sport SG, in the hot seat this morning. Time for that hot seat question that we ask every guest in the UK. Discussions about, you know, breaking up the big four accounting firms. The idea is to reduce conflict of interest between their audit and other businesses. This sector under a lot of scrutiny because of its role in several audit scandals in recent years. And, you know, this morning there was news about KPMG deciding to go ahead to create this independent audit firm in the UK, regardless of whether the regulator decides to, you know, force break up the four accounting firms. So, you know, President ISCA, I got to get your thoughts on this. What's your view?
Okay, so this morning's news about KPMG's plans to sort of break up or set up a independent audit business in the UK is news to me. Obviously, the devil's in the details. I'll see what's coming up later when KPMG makes this, announces more details of this plan. But if you go back one step and ask why do we need to break up the big four, for example, why do we need to break up anybody? And in the UK, the sort of debate focused on three main areas: one on competition, two on conflicts of interest, and three on audit quality. So my standard response to any reaction to an action or non-action is really, let's let our response be specific and commensurate.
Okay.
So if you look at breaking up the big four, for example, or creating independent audit firms for reasons of competition, I think that's probably a good case for that because you do not want, certainly in the UK, the big four wield a lot of power in terms of market share and so on. So governments, as a matter of policy, may not want that. So that's probably a good reason. If you look at conflicts of interest, so what the big four have done in the UK certainly is to publicly announce that they're not going to provide consultancy services to their, I think, the largest audit clients, not all audit clients, right? So that is specific and commensurate response. If you think about breaking up the big four in terms of addressing audit quality, I think then the reasons are, I think, a bit less strong in the sense that I think sometimes to invest in technology, to invest in quality, to invest in sort of the people, processes, systems and so on, quality of these systems and so on. You need the size, you need the war chest, you need the financial muscle to do that. I suppose even if you break up KPMG to an audit firm plus the other firms, they've still got the size to do that. I'm not sure whether the same can be said of the other big four. I think one or two of them could be smaller.
Yeah.
So the reasons may not be so compelling for the other firms. But really, let's be specific and commensurate about it. So I look forward to the details of KPMG's plans, and maybe I can come back on again next time.
Oh, you're definitely welcome to come back on. We've talked about accountancy. We turn our attention to sport. Well, I guess the very Singaporean thing to say is don't play, because Intong holds a World Rugby Level 1 coaching certificate. You're a volunteer coach as well. Do you find that there are transferable skills between, you know, being the president of ISCA in this world full of numbers and, as you say, accountants find the truth, they tell the truth, and sport?
Certainly. In fact, you know, in one of my slides, which I regularly present to in career talks and so on, I talk about sport and accountancy in the same slide. And there are many similarities. Obviously, you know, in terms of sport, it's not just about teamwork. It's not just about collaborating. It's not just about picking yourselves up after defeat or winning properly and so on. You know, there's a lot to learn in sport from sport in terms of finding out about yourself. Same thing with accountancy. We do the teaming, we do the collaboration, obviously, because we can't do everything ourselves. Mm. We work with partners and we work with other people. The same with sport. In sport, you need the diligence to do well. I think you need the perseverance and resilience to do well. Same with accountancy. In sport, it's not a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
In a sense that, you know, if one wins, maybe the other loses, but it's not a zero-sum game in the sense that everybody can win because you learn more, you learn to improve yourself. In accountancy, we're in competition with well, I suppose, everyone. But and you learn how to compete properly, you learn how to compete effectively, you learn to sort of, you know, modify your strategies and so on, your tactics. It's the same in business, it's the same in sport. So there's a lot of commonalities.
How much do you push this philosophy, this value system to people who work for you and your family?
Okay, in terms of one of my sort of philosophies is, and it's centered around innovation. I always tell my people, certainly at ISCA in my firm and in sport, that if you continue to do the same thing over and over again under the same circumstances, you're going to get the same results.
True.
We need to improve all the time, because if we don't improve, even if we maintain our position, it means we are going to get behind, because other people, I'm sure, will keep on improving. In terms of the philosophy of sport, it applies in business, it applies in family life. So my kids are sort of in university now. And they pick themselves up very well because they play sport. I always encourage them. I try not to say a bad word about them. I've not hit my kids, for example, you know, so I've always encouraged them. And so that's one of the philosophies in terms of sport, in terms of being a coach, in terms of being a mentor. I have this philosophy that goes something like, I comfort the troubled, but I trouble the comfortable.
I like that. Always stay out of your comfort zone.
That's right. So you need to keep on pushing yourselves in family, in business and in sports. So that sort of worked so far. Nice. I hope it keeps on working. So these are sort of, I suppose, the universal values that won't get out of date.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I'd like to talk a little bit about how you've taken over the helm at Sport Singapore. It's been close to about 6 months now. I know it's only been 6 months, but what's been your agenda the past 6 months? How's the progress like so far?
Yeah, I think personally, I've tried to understand the ecosystem a bit more.
Yeah.
And ecosystem ranges from student athletes, obviously, to the elite athletes, to the national sports associations, the NSAs, and as well as partnerships with the private sector and the government and so on. So what I've tried to do in the past 6 months is to really go down to the ground, attend as many, if you like, dinners and functions and open days as much as possible, matches, just to talk to the people running sport in Singapore, certainly at the NSA level.
Yeah.
And one of the things I found is that, two things I found, really. One, not all NSAs are well-run. Mm-hmm. Some NSAs are pretty well-run. Others not so, and there are various reasons for that. So that's one of the things I found. The other thing which I found is, regardless of your size of the NSAs and how well run or not, they've always got good ideas coming on. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the NSAs talk to each other enough. I don't think that is shared enough. So for example, if you look at Singapore Golf Association, they've got a program to bring the young golfers into the fold as young as maybe 9 or 12.
Okay.
But they've got a plan for them. They want to put them through to university. They want to give them a career beyond sport. They want to give them a career after their golfing days or competitive golfing days. Or,
sure.
So they've got a plan to make sure that these guys are educated and so on. If you look at Netball Singapore, one of the things they want to do is to develop pipeline for the future national athletes and so on. And they've introduced the rule last year when the tournament started in Q4 last year, to make sure that every team that competes in the Premier League has at least two under-21 players on court, playing time and so on, so that they get the exposure.
Yes.
If you look at Singapore Rugby Union, I think they felt that the level of competition in Singapore could be better, and they needed to synchronize their training calendar, their competition calendar with the rest of the unions in the region. So they're talking to the other unions in the region just to make sure that, you know, everyone's in sync, everyone sort of are converged and come together and play the competition at the same time. So if you're on the sevens program, then everyone's on the sevens program and they go for sevens competition. If you're on the 15s program, then they go on the 15s competition and training program. And so there's a lot of thought leadership around the NSAs, which is not being shared. So that's a pity. But I hope the NSAs do come together and I suppose improve the business or industry of sport.
It ties into your methodology of constantly trying to innovate and not be comfortable. I've got a million more questions that I would love to ask you about sport. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. So very quickly, just to wrap things up, Intong, could you tell us a little bit about Vision 2030 and where we are in terms of, you know, reaching our targets?
Vision 2030 was launched in 2012 as a collective effort between stakeholders in the sport ecosystem to use the power of sport to strengthen Singapore as a nation and to make sure that, you know, we serve Singapore in the coming decades. And Vision 2030 in 2012 really looked at two main issues. One was health and wellness, and the other was social cohesion. In terms of health and wellness, you know, our healthcare spend is expected to be about 3% of GDP pretty soon, which is pretty high. The population aged 65 and above is expected to double to 15% of the population in the next decade. So health and wellness, if we can sort of curb the issues, it's better than cure. It's less costly than cure. So we're going to do that, and that's in conjunction with the MOH and HPBs and so on and so forth. So that's health and wellness. In terms of social cohesion, sport has the ability to cut across race, language, religion, and if I can say, social economic strata, so that the fault lines are less likely to be exploited. And it's a vehicle to inspire the Singapore spirit to uplift and empower fellow citizens, for example. So that's in 2012. We have embarked on a review of Vision 2030, I think late last year.
Okay.
The results should be out, I think, in the second half of this year. If you want to truly enable Singapore to become a sporting nation that is built upon a bedrock of caring, confident, cohesive people, I think more can be done in sport. And it's with this aspiration that we decided to embark on the review of Vision 2030. I don't have the details of what's going to come out.
Sure.
But I would say that I will be a bit disappointed if there's not more narrative around the business and industry of sport.
And just based on that, it's reason for us to get you back in the studio once those results are out. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. Con Intong, President of ISCA and Chairman of Sport SG, my guest this morning. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Elliot.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.